Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. Today is Monday, June 19th, 2023. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stasz Ziolkowski.
And our theme today is the intersection of race, culture, and music. Woohoo! Wow. Sounds like we're going to put out a journal.
or have a celebration with all kinds of things, you know?
Food. Okay.
Yes.
I want to thank Andy Offit Irwin for opening our show today with Tarry Here. And this is my chance to squeeze in my excitement that Andy Offit Irwin will be here, I think for the third or fourth time over the years, at Stories in the Round in Hagerstown on the 26th of this month, June 26th at 7 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown, 13245 Searfoss Pike. And you can get more information about that concert by calling me, Fanny Crawford, at 301-730-1638, or you can email me at fanitsky@hotmail.com, F-A-N-I-T-S-K-Y.
Wow. I'm looking forward to this weekend. I was hesitant I didn't go to the last couple of, workshops. But I'm looking forward to this. Right. And I'm hoping that you can now tell me that you received the thing from my bank.
I have not.
But do you check your mail?
Every single day.
They said it was sent. So,
okay. Well, the mails are very slow and crossing state lines, of course. Apparently adds another layer.
Oh, probably, yes. Okay.
I'm sure that it will turn up. Right. So just to clarify for our listeners there, Andy is doing a private workshop for us on the weekend, but the concert that's open to the public is on Monday, the 26th. Tell us about Speak, Stasz.
Okay, wow. Well, we had a great performance this past month. Unfortunately, Reverend Robert Jones wasn't able to be with us, but we had a wonderful substitute for that, and the performance was just wonderful. And we also had the lady came in from New York, and she told a lot of wonderful stories with music, and one of the local musicians who a lot of us know or have known. Don accompanied her on a guitar, two different kinds of guitars, and it was interesting because they had just met that day.
Wow, Don Osher.
Don Osher, yes. And I'm assuming you saw the concert.
I did not.
Oh,
I had other places I needed to be.
That's a shame because you missed a really good one.
Yeah. But
I was particularly amazed because she would. They had only maybe an hour or two to actually meet each other, throughout the thing she was sitting on his left, he was on a stool, she was on a stool, and she would just kind of glance at him and say, "Sad, this is a sad part." And a music, I mean, I made that up. I don't know if she ever said the word sad. She might have said melancholy and stuff. But I was so impressed because he's just sitting there with no music. No, he's got a guitar in his hand. And instantly, the music was the kind you would hear, like maybe at a funeral or something. Yeah, it was just wonderful. And, when it was jolly, when it was whatever it was, and so the music was really interesting, besides the words that she was using in the songs. And she did some singing. I had the audience do some singing with her. So it was really like one of the things that I know Adam is trying to do more of, is bringing people who are storytellers, but also have something else just more than a spoken word. Not every time, but you know, there are people who do great storytelling just standing still and saying the words, and people who do great storytelling running around the stage and doing all kind of actions. And there's people who do music with their storytelling, which is, in my own case, I have found made me a much better storyteller when my wife would accompany me with her harp. A number of times I got to have, I think some of my absolutely best performances were on those kind of days. I did a number of church performances with Terry playing the harp and beautiful music and intersecting with my performance. Anyway, in July 11th and 12th, Adam Booth, who each year has been, since I've been involved with Speak, Adam has done one of the performances, one of the months, and his performances are always magnificent. And I'm really looking forward to what I believe he's going to do a new piece.
All right.
One of his originals. And I and more. So I'm really looking forward to it. And let's see. Oh, coming up July 4th, there's a parade in Shepherdstown. Anybody who wants to support Shepherdstown, West Virginia, and Speak storytelling and all the things that go on in Shepherdstown, which is a lot, come out and join us at 10 o'clock.
It is a wonderful parade.
Yeah, and I'm going to go to it this year. I didn't go before, but because I can't walk. But now I seem to be at least hopefully repaired.
All right. Glad to hear that. Good to know.
Okay, so.
Do you want to start out with a story?
I thought you probably would.
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Sure.
I always like you to go first because you're the boss.
Would that it were so. So this is on the theme of the intersection of race, culture, and music. And you know that I'm working on my mother's stories. Sure. Her birthday's coming up pretty soon.
82?
Her 82nd birthday? No, she would be 100 and something. Wow. By now. So here's my mom talking, Miriam Crawford. Good afternoon. I've been going through my old files in my apartment. Did I tell you? My name is Miriam. This is Fanny's mother. And she's graciously asked me to tell a few stories or anecdotes from my life, but they're going to be from my files because I've been going through paper in my office. I don't know if she's told you that I was a librarian. Most of my life, I was an archivist at Temple University towards the end of my life, but I have all these files in my apartment, too much paper, and I have to get rid of some of it. Everybody can't be burdened with this. So I'm trying to be a good citizen and nice to my family so they won't have to do all this after I'm gone. And I came across this file marked music. Now it's only an inch thick, which for a librarian in her 90s, that's ridiculous. I can't figure out where I filed all the rest of the music records. Well, I just wanted to tell you these files that I have right now here on my desk. There's one that says music. There's one that says poetry. One that says official. That surprised me. Official. It says Miriam Official. So I'll tell you a little bit about that one in a few minutes. But there's a file called Poetry that I was surprised to see. I had forgotten I had any of those things in there. Probably it's the music file that's most interesting and touches me the most. But thinking about that file marked music, there's a lot of things in there. Then I don't think I'm gonna save all of them. But I had, for my early years, there's nothing in there from my early years. And that's, I'm trying to think what else should be in that file. But I have memories from, you know, learning the songs that children learn of their neighborhoods and their communities. I don't remember where I learned the Michael Finnegan song, but I remember singing that one a lot. There was a man named Michael Finnegan. He had whiskers on his chin again. Along came the wind and blew them in again. Poor old Michael Finnegan, begin again. And you sing that over and over and over, and you get faster and faster until everybody collapses on the floor laughing. It's a children's song, at least in my family. And then there's the song that you heard all over the streets of New York. East side, west side, all around the town, the kids sing Ring of Rosie, London Bridge is falling down. Boys and girls together, me and Mamie O'Rourke, trip the lights fantastic on the sidewalks of New York. It was in movies, it was played by Al Smith, when he ran for president 3 times, you know, he was the governor of New York. And he ran for president 3 times, and he used that as his theme song. You could hear it, loudspeakers everywhere. People used it for advertising jingles. They changed the words. It didn't do Al Smith any good. He lost 3 campaigns. But I grew up with that song, and it's a iconic New York song, I guess. And then when I was a little older, Russ Colombo was the crooner that my sister Irene and I, those are the songs we sang on the way home from school. I remember that pretty vividly. We would hold hands, swinging, walking down the street. And I looked up the lyrics, trying to remember. If I remember, I'll sing a bit for you. It's been many, many, many years. But you would think, as many times as we sang that song, that it would be easier for me to remember. But then, when I got to high school, I had friends who were playing the piano and violin. They were studying classical music. And I got very interested in learning the classics and being able to enjoy the symphony, to learn more about music, just for my own enjoyment. And one of the things I did during that time was to listen to more different kinds of music. You know, jazz was coming up, and Tommy Dorsey was on the radio all the time, so he was a favorite of mine. And there was a song called Weary Blues that was very popular. That was the big band sound. And what was that woman's name who sang? Edith. Edith White, something like that. And Irene and I would sing that song together too. But that was when I started paying attention to other people's music. I grew up in a nominally Jewish, well, my mother was nominally Jewish. My father was pretty observant. And the music of my extended family, we had everything from klezmer music to jazz. But then I started listening to what was playing out on the street. What were other people playing in the shops? What were people singing sometimes on the city trolleys? And I was interested in library work. I was working at the Brooklyn Public Library and going to the Brooklyn schools, and I ended up going to Brooklyn College. And so that takes me to the poetry file. And I have in the poetry file is the words to Langston Hughes' Weary Blues. So it's, you know, very different from Tommy Dorsey's Weary Blues, but some of the feelings are the same. And I, in there is a copy of the poem, Langston Hughes' Weary Blues. It's in my poetry file, right on top. Droning a drowsy syncopated tune, rocking back and forth to a mellow croon, I heard a Negro play. Down on Lenox Avenue the other night, by the pale, dull pallor of an old gaslight, he did a lazy sway. He did a lazy sway to the tune of those weary blues. With his ebony hands on each ivory key, he made that poor piano moan with melody, oh blues. Swaying to and fro on his rickety stool, he played that sad, raggy tune like a musical fool. Sweet blues, coming from a black man's soul. Oh, blues. In a deep song voice with a melancholy tone, I heard that Negro sing, that old piano moan. Ain't got nobody in all this world. Ain't got nobody but myself. I squandered, quit my frowning, and put my troubles on the shelf. Thump, thump, thump went his foot on the floor. He played a few chords, then he sang some more. I got the weary blues and I can't be satisfied. Got the weary blues and can't be satisfied. I ain't happy no more and I wish that I had died. And far into the night he crooned that tune. The stars went out and so did the moon. The singer stopped playing and went to bed while the weary blues echoed through his head. He slept like a rock or a man that's dead. There are poems in that poetry file that I haven't thought about for years and years and years. And one of them is pretty special to me. I don't know that it's on this theme that we're talking about, but it really touches my heart. It's from a poet named Walter Lowenfels, who was a good friend during that period. This was a little bit later in the 30s and into the 40s. He asked me if I would do some typing for him. He was a published poet, and I did. I did hours of typing for him. And when I sent him the packet, almost immediately I got back this poem in the mail that he dedicated to me, Miriam Wexler. I wasn't a Crawford then. It's called A Working Mother's Poem. I'm sorry, I'm getting my dates mixed up. This is after I was married. So this was 1950 that he sent this to me, and I was a new mother. To those who type also after everybody is asleep. Supposing the words are not as human and demanding as your Michael or Denny, or as lovely as your Betty, Nevertheless, dear fellow typist, supposing they are your children too. I mean the poems you type, supposing they too have a life of their own when your already tired fingers start them off not with a scream, but nevertheless, your own particular touch. At any rate, now the original umbilical cord is out. They are visible and grown up, the poems you type. And everyone will know who reads them. They reach the printed page with more than the original love. Supposing nothing we do is private, and the poem, any poem, is not a moment talking to oneself alone, but a breath that arrives to say something at each stage the poem makes to get born. Dear fellow poet, I'm only trying not to thank you, but to make sure you know that typing is also part of the poem that goes on and on, even with misprints. That meant so much to me that he took the time in between his poems to be published to write a poem just for me. There's a file in this stack I have before me that's called Official. And it's, I guess you would call them reference files. It's a thin file. They're letters from the professor I worked for at Columbia University. And his letter of recommendation for me, a certificate for a course I took at American University in Washington called the 20th Institute, Introduction to Modern Archives, when I was upgraded to archivist of the Templana Library at Temple University, the department in charge of the university archives. Maybe because I started thinking about getting a doctorate, that was much, much later in my life. I have no idea why that paper was in there, in that official file. I was thinking about getting a doctorate. I never did go for the doctorate. I waited too long. Temple had a rule then that you had to finish coursework by age 70. And by the time I felt I had the time to buckle down and begin a doctorate, I was too worried I couldn't finish in time. I was still working full time and I didn't retire till I was 72. The other letters in that file make me smile. They're from the job I had at Columbia, but the professor, we corresponded after I got out of the army in the middle 40s. This letter's dated 1946, and he's congratulating me on my work during the war for the army and reminding me of what wonderful research, he says, I did for him as his research assistant. And he wrote a letter of recommendation for me that helped me get my job at the New Rochelle Public Library. But I started after I graduated from Columbia in 1940 with a dual master's degree in history and library science. Then I was official at the Brooklyn Library. It was my neighborhood library, but now I was officially employed. And for the Brooklyn Library, I did surveys for them, community surveys. And that research was a real learning curve for me. I was tasked with finding out how the library, the branch libraries in Brooklyn, were serving the community and what the library needed to do to improve service. What did the different communities there want from the library? And I got out of my comfort zone, out of my Jewish and Italian neighborhood, and learned about the rest of the city. And those surveys for the branch libraries helped me to think outside of my own experience. And so along with the recommendations I had, I got the job in New Rochelle at the library there. And I was, my new title in New Rochelle was Adult Education Director. Isn't that fancy? I was getting more active in local politics, becoming a real activist, and reading the history of social causes, community justice. So I was just wide open to learning about communities that were new to me. And there's some clippings in that New Rochelle Public Library file. I don't think I've mentioned that one yet. And pictures of me being interviewed in various community meetings. And it really brought back to me what an exciting time that was with that new job that to me was very important. This was after World War II. I came back from the WACS, the Women's Army Corps, and got that job in New Rochelle in 1946. That was when I had already learned songs like The Banks of Made of Marble from my Army WAC women friends. Those of us who were determined to make the world a better place, not just fighting fascism and supporting our troops that were working overseas, but also thinking about what was going on in this country. I was stationed first in Arkansas and then in Mississippi, near Hattiesburg at Camp Shelby. And that was a different world indeed from where I grew up in Brooklyn. In that music file, there's a copy of the lyrics to The Banks Are Made of Marble. I've traveled around this country from shore to shining shore. It really made me wonder the things I heard and saw. I saw the weary farmer plowing sod, and loam I heard the auction hammer knocking down his home. But the banks are made of marble, with a guard at every door, and the vaults are stuffed with silver that the farmer sweated for. I saw the seamen standing idly by the shore. I heard the bosses saying, got no work for you no more. But the banks are made of marble, with a guard at every door, and the vaults are stuffed with silver that the seamen sweated for. I've seen my brothers working throughout this mighty land. I prayed we'd get together and together make a stand. Then we'd own these banks of marble, with a guard at every door, and we'd share those vaults of silver that we have sweated for. There's also the words to We Shall Overcome in the file. And that's from the time period when I met Bill Crawford in New Rochelle. He was living in the working class community just next door over the city line. But that's another story. I'm having good time going through my files and remembering those long years ago.
Thank you. That was wonderful. And I bet you would like a time check on that.
Sure.
20 minutes, give or take a few seconds.
Okay. You were very patient. I thought you might wave a hook.
No, I wouldn't do that. No, I enjoy when I enjoy having your relatives work with us.
Visit, yes.
Yes. And this is the only place in my life that I believe in time travel. Which is true, you know? and
it certainly is. It's a good strategy for me.
Yeah, and it works very well. It really is. I don't, you know, well, I have done something like that before, but I haven't done anything for a long time like that. Anyway, and I'm just rambling like an old goat. you think, thankfully, you didn't comment on my comment, which is good. Because, okay, so, all right, so I guess I'm going to go on. And I had a marvelous experience this week, topped off by yesterday going to the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra performance of a special program to celebrate African American culture in a really special place at the Meyerhoff Symphony performance space in Baltimore. A childhood friend of my wife, Terry, a lady by the name of Mary, who plays the viola, was going to be performing in this with the symphony. She's been a member of the symphony for many, many, many years. And we have seen her perform before. But this was a special day for her because it was going to be her last performance. Yeah, yesterday she retired from the Baltimore Symphony. With lots of congratulations from her musical companions in the orchestra. And one of the things I thought was interesting because about her retirement is when a person with such a great history with the symphony in Baltimore and has been a tenured member of the symphony, they get a golden ticket, which means that they can come to any concert put on by the Baltimore Symphony and not have to pay, which is nice. What a nice benefit for a person retiring from a job. That's neat. That'd be like a baseball player being able to go to a stadium and get a good box seat ticket without having to pay for it, a retired player. So anyway, it was wonderful. And the program was designed especially to celebrate African-American composers. And there were three composers who had written material that were put into this program. And I'm going to say a little bit about each of those. So the first musical composition was called Epitaph for a Man Who Dreamed, in memoriam, Martin Luther King Jr. And this was done by Adolphus Hale Stork, a man who happened to be born in the same year I was, and from Rochester, New York, but he now lives in Virginia Beach. He wrote Epitaph for a Man Who Dreamed in 1979 as a contemplative orchestral tribute to Reverend Martin Luther King. And it was premiered in January of 1980 by the Baltimore Symphony with William Henry Curry conducting. "A great man is buried," wrote Hale Stork. "A few mourners ring the graveside, singing a spiritual. Gradually, more bereaved gather and join. They reflect upon the memories of hopes and dreams inspired by their fallen leader. The service concludes and the beloved and the bowed heads begin to lift. They will carry on. Technically, the piece is a study in instrumental control and understatement. There is no virtuosity. There are no sudden dramatic shifts. Harmony is simple. Coloration is medium to dark. There is a very restrained and careful control of climax, there being only one at the end of the work. If someone had told me a while ago, probably many years ago, or even just a short while ago, that I could listen to music and I could imagine, I could, with my mind, I could reflect on what that music was saying about a person or a life. Well, being the same age as the composer, Adolphus Hailstork, I lived through Martin Luther King's life. I was a young teacher when he was killed. But I knew a lot about Martin Luther King. I studied about Martin Luther King. I followed his work in trying to establish real peace for the Black people. And as I listened to that music, I could imagine some of the things that I knew about Martin Luther King and his work, peaceful demonstrations, and finally his death by an assassin. I saved the ticket from yesterday's performance, and I'm going to use it as a bookmark to remind me of what a powerful thing a musical composition can be, played by a symphony orchestra, to set a mood and almost to be able to listen to the music and experience what it's about. So that's my reflection about Adolphus Hailstork. And I guess I could just go on with the other two, because they are, I don't see any sense in breaking it. Alvin Singleton, who was born just a little bit before I was, in 1940, wrote a gorgeous composition that was based on an event that I watched on TV and read about and commented on as a teacher in a classroom. And this composition was written by Mr. Alvin Singleton. Alvin Singleton completed his studies at New York University, at Yale University, in Tanglewood, and then headed to Europe, where he studied with Gioffredo Petrassi at the National Academy in Santa Cecilia in Rome. Singleton wrote 56 blows in 1993 as a commissioned piece from the Philadelphia Orchestra, which gave its premiere on January 13th, 1994. It was inspired by the 1991 confrontation in Los Angeles, captured by a camera, in which Rodney King was kicked and pummeled with batons 56 times in a shocking incident of police brutality. When jurors found the officers not guilty, Senator Bill Bradley of New Jersey protested in a speech, repeating the word POW, P-O-W, 56 times. The work's subtitle, meaning "Who Guards the Guardians," is derived from the satires of the classical Roman poet Juvenal, explaining why his piece does not render the blows literally. Singleton said, "Rodney King could have been anybody. I don't want people to associate this piece with the beating. When people think about this piece in the future, I want them to think what was that piece about? Yes. Oh, yeah. It's about the abuse of power. And I have to say, listening to that piece, which was played immediately after the end of the epitaph, and which the conductor of the entire program had suggested to the audience that they please do not applaud in between each piece, because they should be together and celebrated as one at the end of the third performance. It was wonderful. I could think about what I had seen on the TV and what I knew and had read and had talked about with students, and the music emphasize the importance of stating that who is watching the watchers and who is guarding the guardians. The final piece The final piece was done by Joel Thompson, a younger composer, born in 1988 in the Bahamas, but a citizen of the United States, who resides in Houston, Texas. And Joel Thompson wrote To Awaken the Sleeper. Was premiered in 2021 at the Colorado Music Festival in an orchestral ode with narrator, or orator, as the score calls it, that sets texts by the brilliant writer and thinker James Baldwin. From its opening eruption, labeled Chaos Insurrectional, the score travels through a varied emotional landscape. Moments are punctiliously marked with such indications as resigned, questioning, and patriotic, to explosion and return to reality. In an interview on Atlanta TV channel, Thompson said, "My identity as a Black man is inherently political in this country. To be able to bring my identity to bear in this genre and idiom of music that I love so much, it means so much to me. If we all reckon with our current circumstance and get to see each other, and I think music is a perfect vehicle for us to be able to see each other, I think we can move toward that more perfect union for sure." And it was a wonderful composition. And a serious composition. And one of the fascinations I had was watching, we were in a beautiful seats high in the air above the stage, and being able to watch the, I think it was 79 musicians and the conductor. And for this composition, a marvelous narrator who quoted from some of James Baldwin's work in such a dramatic fashion, standing in front of the orchestra on the right hand side, alone on the stage, even though he wasn't alone, but he was separated from them. But his voice with the music gave a powerful message and reminders of things that had happened. I had a great experience going to the Baltimore Symphony and listening to those pieces and celebrating the final performance by a friend. And it was a really nice experience. And it was the first time I had done anything to celebrate Juneteenth. And I only recently learned about this celebration day, which has been going on for a long time, and at different times in the American history has faded and not been celebrated so much, and then came back and was more celebrated. And in 2021, President Biden signed legislation that made Juneteenth a national holiday. And so that's what we're celebrating today, national holiday for the people who were freed and could join legally in the American culture and contribute to American culture with their talents. So yesterday's concert was a great event, and I really, really had a wonderful time. And I was glad I could share about these three compositions and the music that I heard yesterday. And I'm guessing Fanny has not left the building, but there she is.
That was very moving, Stosh. Thank you for sharing. Wish I had been there to hear the concert.
I don't think I've ever, other than if somebody I knew was portraying a sad thing on stage or something like that. I don't cry. I do cry at things sometimes, but I don't think I've ever cried at a music performance. And I did, you know, I mean, I did, I didn't make any noise or anything, but I had tears running down my cheeks listening to that beautiful music. And, you know, I love music. I always have. I even played in the band in high school, not very well, but I was part of it and I liked being part of it. But it just is, I think it's an amazing thing that we humans, our species, can be moved by sound to such an incredible, intense feeling. And our emotions can be so touched by the music that people compose. I can't imagine how someone writes a composition. I understand how you could write a plan for a team of what each person is supposed to do. That makes sense to me. It's a physical thing. And I don't understand how someone can sit and construct a composition, a musical composition, with flutes, brass instruments, you know, tuba and trombones, French horns, and then a viola, many violas, cellos, upright bass, violins, a harp, all that different, drums, and I guess it's a xylophone. There was one stage and man played it. And actually there were four, at one time there were five percussionists, five men, well, four men and one woman at the back of the stage in plain sight, but, and they were all at different percussion instruments, which was just interesting. And then one thing that I absolutely had never noticed before, and it might be because of the way I was sitting. I was sitting very much up in the air, so I was looking down at the orchestra. And it amazed me that when the violins were all playing, had to be 20 some violinists or and with the violas, viola also. And the movement of the bow was like they were robots. It wasn't that they were stiff or anything. It was just that they were perfectly in touch with each other. When the bow from the concertmaster was slid to the left, every bow from the rest of the violinist was slid to the left. And back and forth, when they did very fast movements with the bow across the strings, it was perfect. It was like watching a beautiful dance performance by just paying attention to the violinist and their bows. So anyway, it was such a great thing to experience, because it was not only in a beautiful place to celebrate a friend, to listen to beautiful, incredible music, and to see such a professional performance that was done. And I really, 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 really did have a great day.
Do you know if it was recorded, Stosh?
I am sure it was. And I believe, let me see if I may take just a second. I think I'm going to check this for sure, and I'll get back to you on it. But I believe someplace in the program it said there is a live stream of the program, and it's available for a limited time. And in the, I can show you because the audience can't see this, but you can. And there is a one of those things, whatever you call that thing.
A code. Put your phone onto it.
Yeah, use your phone, places. Take a picture of it, and it'll open it up.
Yeah.
You know. So. Yeah, and I will. I don't know how I can get that to you.
I'll take a picture of this. I'll just go online and see if I can find something.
Okay. And the program was, the entire program was called To Awaken the Sleeper.
Okay.
I hadn't missed that man's name. The narrator in the third piece was Roderick Dixon, and what a voice. And he is an opera talent, gorgeous voice. It's always amazing to me when I hear someone speak and they have that kind of voice that just is. Years ago, I work with a group of military men. I helped them organize something at Rash Field in Baltimore, Maryland. I'm not even sure I can remember how I got involved in it, but it was about a competition. It was a military competition and everything, and they had an announcer for it, and the guy introduced himself to me. And you know, I didn't have anything to do with him especially, but I was organizing their event so that it made sense from my point of view, and so that the audience would have some sense of it. And I had been asked to do that because I ran track programs, and I was a referee for the state track meet, and I also refereed and stuff. So I had a reputation of being able to organize some things. Anyway, the man who was the announcer for the whole day, I was introduced to. He was an enlisted man, I believe, a master sergeant, and I spoke to him. He had a powerful voice, and I said, I enjoy listening to people like yourself because that your voice is so wonderful. And he said, this very honest man, he said, you know, it's the only thing I can do that I'm better at than anybody else, said my voice. And it's, and he said, luckily for me, I didn't have to make it. He said, it came with me. And he said, I've been, my Army career has been able to be mostly sitting behind the microphone at some beautiful place and telling people what I'm watching and explaining it to them. And I thought that was just wonderful because he, you know, it wasn't like he, it was wonderful, very professional and everything. But he realized that he had this talent that he didn't have to go out and develop, like, you know, like an athlete or something like it. And it had given him such a good experience in the military. And I imagine when he retired, he could still do lots of things with his voice. So it was great.
Can you give us a time check, Stosh?
It has been 55 minutes exactly.
All right. It's just about time to close the show. I just want to mention that Andy Offutt Irwin will be in Hagerstown on June 26th. His concert at Stories in the Round at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown, 13245 Sear Foss Pike. That's Route 56, Maryland Route 56. And if you want tickets, you can call me at 301-730-1638. And Stosh, say one more time who our speak performer is.
Speak performer coming up is Adam Booth.
Very good.
July 11th and July 12th. And guaranteed, going to be a great performance.
I'm going to close out the show and then John will tell us what's coming up next on the radio. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stosh Siolkowski.
Your co-hosts for the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. We are independent community radio broadcasting from Martinsburg, West Virginia, Bolivar, West Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland. We are offering our listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging you, our listening community, to share, preserve, and expand all our stories. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for...
Oh, we got a special Juneteenth playlist coming up here. That's
all right.
Very similar to my Memorial Day list, but anyway, we'll hope for the best on that. Should mention, by the way, that your guys' program is now broadcasting at 7 p.m. on weeknights.
Okay.
Not 5 the way it was before, but it's been doing. The way I'm doing it is I do your most recent one first, and then randomly select one of the most recent four for the rest of the week.
Okay.
Wow. So that's how it's, I'm kind of doing it, so I don't have to reprogram it every time. But anyway, should know that.
Okay. So, Fanny, before you go.
Yes.
Can you give me any update on the